Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share this hour with you. Today, we're going to take a look at several different important topics, always starting with the latest on health and healing. This is from King's College London. Eating a plant-based rich diet reduces the risk of developing COVID-19. That's terrific. They examined 600,000 COVID patients to get this information. I'll go into it in depth. Also today, we're going to take a look at what a group of scientists out of Great Britain have to say when it comes to, are we being given all of the information necessary to make informed decisions when it comes to COVID? And I think that's all that any reasonable person would expect. Just lay out what you know, don't hold anything back, be transparent, and then let us take a look to see, do we want to participate in this? And to the degree that it can be scientifically justified, fine. We always have to understand that we don't live alone, even though we may be alone at this moment in our life, but we live as a society. So there's importance when we look at the larger good for everyone else. But what if we've been manipulated? What if we haven't been given the full facts? What if we've been lied to? Well, you're going to hear today from one of the world's leading professors in mathematics. He is Professor Norman Fenton. Now, we had a short piece that he did, but last evening I found a longer piece. It's only 7 minutes. He is considered one of the greatest mathematicians anywhere. He is Professor of Risk Information Management at Queen Mary University of London. He's also a chartered engineer and a fellow of the British Computing Society. He has published hundreds of peer-reviewed journals. He has received outstanding awards of achievement. He has an impeccable background. He's against academic media censorship, and he's applied all of his knowledge to looking at COVID numbers, and he says they're all wrong. Now, he has held back coming forward until now, but he is not alone. Tens of thousands of mainstream pro-vaccine, pro-science, pro-medical establishment, medical doctors and scientists are coming forward because they see how misinformation by the media, by the talking heads, by the experts consistently brought on, have been wrong. We can look back a year and a half and say, that wasn't right, that wasn't right, and that wasn't right. So why should we believe them today? Please understand, I am non-political. I'm non-ideological. I'm looking for the truth wherever it is, and I'll share it with you. But because I'm also a scientist, and because I spend thousands of hours a year doing research, I try to find the truth. Not just what's popular, not just what's in vogue, not what is politically correct, but real quality information. Hence, I always post all of the stuff I share with you. It all comes from peer-reviewed literature. Everything I say about health, you can find on PubMed. I take the time, Richard Gale takes the time, our scholar in residence, and we go through this for hours every day. Because when was the last time that you heard the information we share on this program? That's why it's new and original every day. Also today, Tony Fauci, well, apologizes for misspeaking. Oh, no, this is a parody. I think you'll enjoy it. But time permitting, I'm going to have a debate between two people diametrically opposed. Russell Brand, who is coming from a very liberal, progressive position, and Candace Owens. And it's important to see, do either one of them make sense to you? Are any of their arguments reasonable? Afterwards, you can call in and share your points of view. I am putting this up there because I believe that we need to hear differing points of view argued out in public so that we can see whether or not any of this makes sense. Also, what happens if your partner tries to stop you from growing because it's a threat to them? It's a short piece, but I believe it gives us some really good insights why that happens. So, and tomorrow I'm going to be addressing some of the concerns out there that we're not looking deep enough into some of our social issues. Well, I'm going to take you to some really deep depths tomorrow in a commentary. It's done, but it's a little too long to offer on today's show. So let's go right to it. A recent study published in the peer-reviewed journal Gut by researchers from King's and Harvard Medical School looked at 600,000 COVID people infected. And what they found was this. People with the highest quality diet were substantially less likely to develop COVID-19 than those with the lowest quality diet, and 40% less likely to fall severely ill. Now imagine the following. Let's stop thinking we're all the same. We are not. If you live down in, let's say, the Mississippi Valley, or down in lower Alabama, or down in Louisiana, where you can drive for hours and see factories spewing toxic chemicals on one side of the road, and mainly poor African Americans living on the other side of the road. Now stop and ask those people, which we did. It's in the new film, Last Call for Tomorrow. And you'll see every single family was sick. Their diets were not healthy to begin with. They suffered, all of them, from vitamin D deficiency. They had morbid obesity was common. Obesity was absolutely normal. Diabetes was everywhere. And there was no help for them. None. The factories across the street denied any of their polluting materials were causing these problems. You don't have a small number of people. You have millions of people suffering in some form of abject poverty who, if they have the knowledge to take supplements and to exercise or have access to a gym, they are not in that group. These are people who generally don't exercise, frequently smoke or drink, eat a lot of fast foods, unhealthy foods, don't get enough sunlight, and if they do get sunlight, because of the melanin in their skin, it blocks the formation of vitamin D. So you have multiple cofactors that are making it more susceptible to any disease, not just COVID. Now, this study is showing if you have a healthy plant-based diet, you are less likely to get COVID to begin with, and then you're far less likely, 40% less likely, to fall severely ill. But I want to give you an actual example, someone who I know. This is a professional in the health field for almost 40 plus years who got COVID and nearly died. And they nearly died when in intensive care they were given the drug that is given to all these people from the very beginning, Remdesivir. Now, I've reported on this, and we've had experts report that the deaths from this, the kidney and liver failure from this drug, are phenomenal. It's a terrible, dangerous drug and should not be used, and yet it's the drug that they're using. And this person got this drug. And there was a great deal of effort on the part of a lot of us to get this person out of the hospital, and now this person's into a holistic medical clinic and is recovering nicely. So the question is, why would a person who is in the healthcare field not know what to do to prevent this from happening and to immediately go into an extended effort if you are infected? I can't answer that. I can't answer why one of my closest friends throughout my entire adult life, Dr. Martin Feldman, died on an operating table after getting a medical colonic. I can't answer why that happened. I can give you my suppositions because he saved thousands of lives. So let's be clear on something. The fact that someone has the knowledge or motivation to help others does not automatically assume that they're going to help themselves. I have gotten emails last night from another friend. Oh, what do I do? What do I do? You know, and everybody's saying, what do they do? Don't you ever listen to the program? No. If you listen to the program, do you actually put together a kit that you have at home? Do you have a kit when you fly? No. So you're just going to go through life listening to me but not doing anything. That's about 90% of my audience, unfortunately. That's the reality. So let's stop assuming we're all the same. We're all into health, or we're, you know, our immune systems are strong. It's not the case. If you're highly stressed, you've just really crippled your immune system. But we don't look at how we can constructively deal with stress, because we frequently are not willing to get out of a problem by changing where we live. What do I do? My God, what do I do? If I don't get the vaccine, I'm going to lose, you know, my job. So find another job somewhere else where you at least will not be suffering the same initial concept of it's someone else's body to do with what they want. If you don't want this, okay, that's your business. But don't play it both ways. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, I don't know, when there's information that guide you. And at the very end, you can always say, I'm out of here. And what do I believe? I believe people in New York should be out of the state. New Jersey, out of the state. California, out of the state. Because you do not control the body politic locally at the state level. The corruption is endemic in all these places, and they have the sanctity over you. And they have the entire judicial system to work against you. So there's a time where you simply say, okay, let me find in this wonderful, beautiful country of ours safer, healthier, more progressive places to live, where I still maintain the sanctity to make my choice from informed consent with my physician instead of being forced to do something. And someone who doesn't take that in consideration is just trusting blindly authority. Well, take a look at that authority. In any case, I'm just saying, as many times as I said, if you're deficient in vitamin D, vitamin C, selenium, zinc, vitamin A, you're at far greater risk of developing COVID, but also emphysema and also a cold. So go to GaryNall.com. Download the articles. The articles are only scientific studies from peer-reviewed literature on PubMed. Okay? That'll help save some lives. And by the way, I know some of you are doing exactly that, so good for you. Anyhow, this was the first longitudinal study of diet and COVID-19, and the first to show that a healthy diet cuts the chance of developing the disease in the first place. This morning, early, 7 o'clock, I was down at a clinic getting my blood taken. I get blood regularly taken. This blood was to see, this is an antibody test. Antibody is different than an antigen test. This tells me, the blood is sent out. It's not a PCR test. The blood says, have you ever been exposed? Did you have COVID? If you did, and you have the titers, antibodies, that's good news. You have to understand all of the science shows that if you've had COVID in your life today, then you've got protection. But you wouldn't know that from the mainstream media. You wouldn't know that from any of the governmental agency or Anthony Fauci. But it was interesting. I was speaking with some of the people there, and people are afraid. They don't know what the science is. They don't read the science. They don't have access to it. They don't know how to get it. They're just going by what they see on television. Well, you know what you see on television. So everybody in this audience should have an antibody test taken. It's not expensive, and it's covered by, you know, insurance or Medicare. Or worst case scenario, I think it's $190. But in any case, if you've had COVID, maybe you thought it was a cold. Maybe you thought you had the flu. Maybe you think it wasn't COVID. Maybe it wasn't. Good. But if it was, and you had it, and you're now protected, now super protect yourself. Build up your immune system even more. Take it seriously. Because there's another study I'm going to cite in a moment that shows you about that. Separately from University College London comes a study, and it showed that when you target your gut and get the good probiotics in there, and the good food and high fiber, you can relieve rheumatoid arthritis, because you can help heal the damage to the lining of the gut, and that plays an important role in the development of rheumatoid arthritis, paving the way for new approaches. And that's why healthy fermented foods, It's really terrific for you. Last night, for example, I made myself a beet pomegranate salad. This is really high in nitric oxide, which heals the internal arteries and veins, expands the blood, gives a greater blood supply to the brain, the heart, your extremities. But also, I use the fermented beets, and you're getting a lot of probiotics that way. Very tasty. You make a nice dressing out of olive oil, and then take some raspberries, put the raspberries in a blender with a tablespoon of olive oil, put in some seasonings. I use tarragon, anise seed, tarragon, and rosemary. Blend it up, put in the juice of one lime, and that's spritzed over the salad. So the salad isn't soggy, nothing collects at the bottom, but then you enfold the salad with it, meaning you roll the salad, and now you have a salad that tastes like it's got salt. There's no salt, but it's delicious tasting, simple and easy to do. But it's good for your gut, which means it's good for your immune system, because what you do that's good for the gut also portends well for your immune system. Remember this, healthier gut bacteria, healthier immune system. There was also a study at Shahid University of Medical Sciences in Iran, and they found the body fat mass percentage reduced among trial participants who received melatonin. Mela, M-E-L-A, tonin, T-O-N-I-N. Melatonin helped reduce obesity, and obesity is the most common metabolic disorder in the world. And that means you just have excess body fat. And so they went to see whether melatonin, which most people think is good for sleeping, it is. Good for cancer, sure is. But it also reduces body mass index, BMI, and waist circumference, WC, and the body fat mass percentage, BFMP, and made a big difference. So just add that in to your regimen if you're overweight, melatonin. Also from University of Massachusetts Amherst, scientists have a new hypothesis. Mind you, this isn't proven. It's a hypothesis for changing in reproductive behavior and physiology. University environmental health scientists have developed what they call an overlooked hypothesis to help explain the projected global population decline in years to come. Social stress. Stress from social media and other largely empty or overwhelming social interactions may be leading or contributing to changes in reproductive behavior and reproductive physiology. And this was done at the School of Public Health and published in Endocrinology. It makes sense, and this reason is that when you're stressed and you're getting your input and feedback over social media, don't assume for a moment that these are real friends and they're giving you positive input. It's like watching someone throw a loaf of bread into the Amazon River where you have piranha just come in and gobble it up. I look at these social media and Twitter, and I'm not on any of that. I don't have a Twitter. I've never Twittered. I've never texted anyone. I'm not going to. I like speaking directly with people so can I understand what they're saying in the proper context, have a fair exchange of ideas. I'm not on Facebook. By the way, the last time I was on Facebook years ago, they had this little circle and it showed me how many people were on at that time. And on a daily basis, it was somewhere between 7.5 to about 7.75 million people. I gave it up. Didn't want it. No, didn't want it. Go off the grid. So I want to look at the world as it is, to get feedback from real people in whatever environment that I'm in, from the people in that environment, and then take into account that someone is going to tell you what the world is about who lives in a gigantic mansion up in Beverly Hills or on Fifth Avenue is going to have a different perspective than someone who's, you know, two roommates in a tiny little loft somewhere paying, you know, $2,000 a month. Versus someone who's sleeping on the streets, who used to have a home, you get three different perspectives. Everybody's got a different perspective. Don't get it from social media. It's not the right place. And also from Anhui Medical University in China, an article published in the British Journal of Medicine, Nutrition, vitamin D cuts asthma exacerbations by 74% in children. That's really important. Vitamin D supplementation can cut the risk of asthma exacerbations in children, but it does not impact respiratory infections in healthy children. So that's important. Make sure your child is getting outside to get the real vitamin D and then not supplementation. And finally, from the Institute of Cosmetics in Slovenia, high-dose coenzyme Q10 can improve wrinkles around the eyes and other parts of the face. The scientists at the Institute in Slovenia showed that 150 milligrams per day of coenzyme Q10 for 12 weeks were associated with reduced wrinkles around the eyes and around the mouth and lips compared with a placebo. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Biofactors. Well, that's probably why some of you are not even aware of why you have less wrinkles around your mouth and eyes, because you're taking coenzyme Q10, and that's a good amount. We are 21 minutes into the program. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear again from one of the world's leading scientists, mathematicians, who's published hundreds of articles, who knows what he's talking about, and he is telling you right up here, and he says several things. And his name is Dr. Norman Fenton, F-E-N-T-O-N. He has received international awards. So he's not a crackpot. He's not anti-science. He's not anti-vaccine. He is a very liberal. So he meets all the criteria for someone to trust if you're the mainstream media. Why hasn't a single person from the mainstream media interviewed him? Why is this the only time you've heard of this person? And he's just one of a whole group of scientists with equal credentials who've written articles together, but nothing that they have written has made it out into the public domain. Here it will. This is real science, not political science. This is real data, not personalized, politicized, weaponized propaganda. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Can we believe any of the COVID numbers? But I'm delighted to be bringing Professor Norman Fenton to the show to discuss this tonight. Now, the entire COVID-19 pandemic response has been driven by the numbers that we see over and over again in the media. And from the start, back in March 2020, we've been bombarded with statistics, apparently primarily aimed at keeping us as confused as possible and in a sustained state of fear, it seems.
Well, I mean, when COVID first struck in 2020, we were as concerned as everybody, you know, after seeing images out of China and Italy, for example. I mean, I didn't know then that the images of young people dropping dead on the streets in Wuhan were likely faked. But, you know, we looked at the publicly available case and fatality data to get an understanding of the seriousness and trajectory of the problem. But unlike others, we applied these causal probabilistic models to better understand and explain the data and to determine the real risk. I mean, that's basically what we do in terms of our research. It's not just me, there's a team of people I work with at Queen Mary. Now, initially, we found the very different case and fatality rates between similar neighboring countries could largely be explained by very simple causal explanations, such as, for example, different amounts of testing done and the different classifications of what constituted a COVID case and a COVID death. So, for example, initially in the UK, the only people at the beginning who were really being tested and classified as a COVID case were those who were actually already hospitalized with serious symptoms. And that meant that the population infection rate was being underestimated, while the infection fatality rate was being overestimated. So we published articles then in peer-reviewed journals about this and related issues, which were not considered in any way controversial. Because, in fact, we argue that to get the true infection and fatality rates, there had to be widespread random testing. And that turned out to be something that subsequently did happen. But ironically, I now believe that's been the biggest mistake of all. Well, the thing was, I mean, we'd already found, as I say, about May, June 2020, that the case fatality rate was much lower than originally assumed. And so I thought it was increasingly strange that, you know, that the government was using very simplistic case numbers to drive policy decisions at that time, like lockdowns, without any kind of cost-benefit analysis. And I also thought it was strange that anybody considered to have COVID within 28 days of death was classified as a COVID death, even if the cause was something else. So these were kind of, originally, you know, that when did I sort of first smell a COVID rat? These are sort of things that came up. But the thing that really triggered me was when I found out about the extent of the flaws of the PCR testing and the fact that the whole narrative was based around equating a case, a COVID case, with a positive PCR test rather than, you know, with somebody being ill with COVID symptoms. And the problem was in September of 2020, there was a massive increase in testing, but the public was only being shown the rising case number curves. You know, this was the, you know, part of the kind of like the Project Fear. And this was used, those, you know, those increasing curves were used to justify the new lockdowns that, you know, that happened around that time. And there was no consideration given to the massively increased number of people being tested. Now, in particular, it was clear that there was now widespread testing of asymptomatic people, i.e. basically healthy people.
Yes.
And there was little acknowledgement that most of these were false positives. And alarm bells were really ringing when I saw that the COVID triage data, which includes like 999 and 111 calls, which really did spike massively for the initial pandemic in March and April, were actually showing fairly normal seasonal rates and fluctuations in contrast to these massively increasing case curves. And then, you know, I was suspicious of what data was actually being hidden from us that the government must have known. So why was there no separate data on asymptomatic and symptomatic cases? Why was there no data on how many symptomatic cases go on to develop symptoms? Why was there no information on PCR test accuracy? Why was there no confirmatory testing of asymptomatic cases? I mean, later on, in, when we did a study of asymptomatics based on the Cambridge data, we found that 36 out of 43 PCR positive cases were actually found to be false when they retested the same samples. The death numbers, even over the whole pandemic for children, are essentially zero, right? So I'll give you give some justification for that. So in the report, let's say up until in the first 12 months, right, there were 25, only 25 under 18s in the UK classified as COVID deaths.
Mm.
And around 15 of those had life-limiting underlying conditions. And that includes 13 who were living with complex neurodisabilities. In
yes.
fact, only six had no recently recorded underlying major health conditions. Because generally the infection fatality rate, i.e. the probability of dying if you are genuinely infected, was exaggerated. I mean, it's very low, you know. And yet, there's been public studies, even intelligent people seem to think, you know, if you get the virus, you know, and you're, let's say, your age, let's say, Dan, you know, they seem to think that's, well, there's a 15%, there's a 10 to 15%, even clever people, there's a 10 to 15% chance that you're going to die. And it's simply massively overstated. We know that. But that perception is there because of the whole kind of like the Project Fear, the propaganda of fear that's been, you know, absolutely dominated the media narrative. You think, you know, why aren't more academics, you know, clamoring for the data and doing the data analysis, right? As I said, it's because I think they're scared, you know, they're scared of destroying, you know, I think if you do find out the kind of data we've been looking for, again, it will confirm, you know, my suspicions that the scale of the problem has been exaggerated in order to fit in to this sort of, you know, build back better narrative, right? But what I don't understand, I have to say, like you, is that, I mean, if you think about it, historically, you know, academics are supposed to be the ones who question the official narrative, who dig deep into this, right? They're the ones who are supposed to reject, and in particular, they're the ones also would be especially doing this because they would naturally reject infringements of civil liberties and government interventions, especially when those interventions most adversely affect the poorest in society. So everything, in a sense, is geared, you think, towards academics.
Mind you, that was an hour-long interview. That was just one segment. But he's talking about the children and the actual number of children who have died from COVID. It's almost non-existent versus those who had some leukemia or comorbidities. Tiny amount. That 99.99% of all children will survive. And yet you wouldn't know that. You would think that every single child's life is being put at risk if they're not vaccinated twice. And then, of course, boosters after that. Are you beginning to see how you've been lied to? And here's a larger question. And I would like you to call in and respond to this, please. If the same governmental agencies have lied to us about weapons of mass destruction justifying going into Iraq, that the president of Assad of Syria was using poison bombs on his own population, all of which was shown to be wrong, that we supported the White Helmets when they were a terrorist group, that we needed to go into Vietnam, and that Agent Orange was not a problem, both of which were problems. We didn't need to go there, and Agent Orange has left a deadly legacy on American vets as well as the environment and miscarriages, that we needed to bail out Wall Street banks, but not the average person and not small business people under Obama and Bush and Obama, that when it came to about $16 trillion, we bailed them out, that we care about immigrants. Really? I care about immigrants. But I don't believe our government, any of the offices of government have really cared. Any administration, I should say. You don't put children in cages. And yet Clinton did it. Obama expanded it. Look at all the people coming now. If you really care about immigrants, my suggestion is first you set up offices in all the countries where they're wanting to come to the United States. And some of these are completely legitimate. Unless you are a farmer and have found because of repeated flooding or a drought, you cannot grow anything any longer. You can't feed your family. And your government's not supporting you. Or you have crime in El Salvador. And gangs control the country. And MS-13 will go into schools and select the young and attractive, let's say, females who are from 12 to 14, 15 years old. And then they tell the parents, if your daughter calls back or escapes, tries to escape or goes to the police, you'll be killed. And suddenly, parents who are mortified, and they know that these people will do exactly that, tens of thousands of daughters are coming across to going into houses of prostitution, these sex houses throughout the Midwest and around the country. And we know this because over, I think it was 84% of the DNA tests showed that the young ones coming with the adults were not biologically associated. Now imagine that you had offices there where you could help people there before their journey, help them not take that long trip, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 miles through terrible territory, through gangs, being raped and beaten, everything stolen from you, sitting on top of boxcars. We've seen it. It's not a myth. That's suffering at a level that most people just cannot imagine just to get here. So why not make it easier? Why not have trains that we hire to bring people safely, that are, have security on those trains to see that nobody is robbed and beaten, etc., and then have a whole application for the person so when they get here we have it gigantic. You want to put some money in the infrastructure instead of giving it your private-private relationship? Let me tell you right now, and watch to see if I'm not right. All these trains of dollars, but Bernie and the other people that really are unfortunately idealistic at one level, good for them, but completely delusional another level, they should know that all this money, or the vast majority of it, will never build new bridges, will never do what it's supposed to. It's going to go into corporate hands in the private corporations who will take off most of the money and then subcontract and will get maybe 2 to 3% of what should be repaired and fixed for the future. So it's not going to do diddly squat to help the people, communities, or prevent global warming. That's the reality. That's how it works all over the world, but especially in the United States. Never trust your politicians. They lie nonstop. So why not set up gigantic housing projects in the United States at border places where you have clinics, medical clinics, psychological help, you have English course to help them, you have places where they can go and get counseling on best places to go, and then set up liaisons around the United States. These people are not just dropped off someplace, may have diseases, may become victims themselves of violence, where at least you're trying to bring someone who wants to be in America into America, but under real, hospitable, and nurturing ways to help them get started. We're not doing any of that. And that's what we need to do. Oh, and by the way, not that it could possibly ever happen, but now that Afghanistan is controlled by the Taliban, and not just any Taliban, the majority of the Taliban leaders are really rough characters. These are the ones that had no problem taking away women's rights and killing gays. These are rough people. And it's going to get everything that was done in the last 20 years that improved people's quality of life is going to be wiped away. And by the way, there's also 200,000 Afghanis who work for the United States in different capacities. And it was all in their data system. And now they're going door to door and finding these people to kill them. In any case, now they let all the prisoners out of Bagram, the largest military prison in Afghanistan. Thousands of ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, they're all there, and they've worked with the Taliban. And now they're free to do what they want. They have all the arms, the money, the training, the safety. They can do anything they want. I'm sure none of them would think about maybe it's time that we sent cells into the United States across the borders and did the next 9/11 in some way. I'm sure that didn't cross anyone's mind. Yeah. Wow. How absolutely irresponsible. But that's what it is. But if you put measures in place, help those, don't just allow them to come across and migrate where they can and survive as best they can. That's not showing what we are as a country. Just my own thoughts. Anyhow, I believe in allowing people to come to this great country, as almost all of our relatives did, but giving them an opportunity to come not as some form of indentured, manipulated person, but someone who can actually enjoy and thrive and thrive and contribute to the greater cultural melting pot that is our country. Oh, and by the way, brand new out today, new studies find evidence of superhuman immunity to COVID-19 in some individuals. Quote, some scientists have called it superhuman immunity or bulletproof, but immunologist Shane Crotty prefers hybrid immunity. Quote, overall hybrid immunity to SARS-2 appears to be impressively potent. This is in Science. And so no matter what you call it, this type of immunity offers much needed good news in what seems like an endless array of bad news regarding COVID-19. So, how do you get super immunity? How about actually having a lifestyle that creates super immunity? Exercising, keeping your body trim and fit, de-stressing, whether it's reading, listening to music, walking, meditating, yoga, but do something that allows you to deal with your situations better. Eat a healthy plant-based diet and take all the nutrients known. Astragalus, grapeseed extract, patriarcho, yeah, vitamin D, C, E, selenium, magnesium. That's how you develop a super immunity. That's good news. Now I want you to hear Dr. Kerry Mullis. Mind you, he's the one who won the Nobel Prize for discovering the PCR. He was a friend. I filmed him a lot. And by the way, I'm looking for an archivist because I have thousands and thousands of interview hours going way back. It's all been by two separate people who did a great job. David and Alex, they did a wonderful job putting it all into order. Now I got to hire someone who just sits there all day and watches films and then puts them in categories so you, the people, can download them for free as a public service. And Kerry Mullis, I must have 12 hours of him over the years. But this is a little clip from one of them. He was opposed to Anthony Fauci. He thought he was a crackpot, self-serving opportunist. And he said, don't use the PCR as a diagnostic tool. It's not meant for that. Listen to him in his own words.
What is it about humanity that wants to go to all the details and stuff and listen? You know, these guys like Fauci get up there and start talking. You know, he doesn't know anything really about anything. And I'd say that to his face. Nothing. The man thinks you can take a blood sample and stick it in an electron microscope, and if it's got a virus in there, you'll know it. He doesn't understand electron microscopy, and he doesn't understand medicine. He should not be in a position like he's in. Most of those guys up there on the top are just total administrative people, and they don't know anything about what's going on the bottom. You know, those guys have got an agenda, which is not what we would like them to have, being that we pay for them to take care of our health in some way. They've got a personal kind of agenda. They make up their own rules as they go. They change them when they want to. And they smugly, like Tony Fauci, does not mind going on television in front of the people that pay his salary and lie directly into the camera. You can't expect the sheep to really respect the best and the brightest. They don't know the difference, really. I mean, I like humans, don't get me wrong, but basically there's a vast majority of them do not possess the ability to judge who is and who isn't a really good scientist. I mean, that's a problem. That's a main problem, actually, with science, I'd say, in this century, because science is being judged by people. Funding is being done by people who don't understand it. Okay, who do we trust? Fauci? Fauci doesn't know enough to, you know. If Fauci wants to get on television with somebody who knows a little bit about this stuff and debate him, he could easily do it, because he's been asked. I mean, I've had a lot of people, president of the University of South Carolina, ask Fauci if he'd come down there and debate me on the stage in front of the student body, because I wanted somebody who was from the other side to come down there and balance my, because I felt like, well, these guys can listen to me, but I need to have somebody else down here that's going to tell me the other side. But Fauci didn't want to do it.
Okay. Fauci refused to debate the man who invented the PCR test, and he knew how it would be manipulated. Guess what? You just heard that guest speaker, well, the top ones say that the false positives were what we were seeing, and yet the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times said these were cases. A case is someone who's actively sick or engaged in fight with that virus. No, these were just false positives from the PCR. Now they reverse themselves. By the end of the year, a few months, they will no longer be using the PCR test. They should be using antibody tests. And they should have all along. But that shows you the game that's been played. It's all in the foundational aspect. So that if the foundation is wrong, everything comes from it is going to be wrong also. This is just something you have not seen before. Quote, this is from a group of scientists in Great Britain. We'll get to them in a moment. Quote, more than 900 pages of material related to U.S.-funded coronavirus research in China were released to The Intercept. And then it goes into what these all show. And clearly, it shows that Echo Health Alliance, that's that U.S.-based group that gets money from Anthony Fauci, was doing gain-of-function research. In fact, there's a clip there showing that. And then it also shows that Dr. Peter Daszak, D-A-S-Z-A-K, and that there were bats in the Wuhan lab because someone smuggled out film of the bats in the lab. So they said, oh, there are no bats in the lab. Yes, there were. Oh, it couldn't have come from this lab. Yes, it did. We didn't fund it. Well, here's proof of $3.1 million, including $599,000, that the Wuhan Institute of Virology used, in part to identify and alter bat coronaviruses like to infect humans. And so, thank you, The Intercept. This is a good piece. And then they had quoted Professor Richard Ebright, a molecular biologist at Rutgers University, document contains critical information about the research done in Wuhan, including about the creation of the novel viruses. Quote, the viruses they constructed were tested for their ability to infect mice that were engineered to display human-type receptors on their cells, end quote. While they were working on SARS-related coronaviruses, they were carrying out a parallel project at the same time on MERS-related coronaviruses. He also then ended up saying that the information Fauci given was untrustworthy, meaning he lied. Okay, but now there's something even more. This, I know you have not heard. This is brand new information. There's a group of scientists, and what they're saying is they have absolute proof that that the blame squarely sits at the Chinese lab researchers in Wuhan, and they've tried to cover up their tracks. Quote, there was, quote, deliberate destruction, concealment, and contamination of data, end quote, in the Chinese labs, and, quote, Chinese scientists who wish to share their knowledge have not been able to do so or have disappeared, end quote. Who says this? Noted British professor and scientist Agnes Dalgelish and Norwegian scientist Dr. Birger Sorensen. And they have published their results in the scientific journal, A Quarterly Review of Biophysics Discovery, and that's important. So, they found, and you can hear them in the interview say that what really drew their attention was they found four amino acids in a row, and you don't find that at all unless the gene had been altered. So they can prove that it was altered. They can prove that it was manufactured in a laboratory, didn't come from bats in nature, jumping species. And, quote, the only way you can do this is if in an artificial manufacturing it, end quote. That's according to him. He says, quote, the laws of physics means you cannot have four positively charged amino acids in a row, end quote. Sorensen said that, quote, it is extremely unlikely to find even three, let alone four amino acids in the same row. Anyhow, this whole piece that is up on PRN.fm and GaryNall.com lays this whole story out. And so we have more and more mainstream, highly respected, non-controversial scientists coming forward and telling you the truth about all this. So, he's still being protected by the mainstream media instead of them doing their own independent investigation. And by the way, it's also the case that on the night that the stories began to break, Fauci, according to the Freedom of Information Act letters or emails, it was all redacted what he said to a group of scientists who initially said, this looks like laboratory. But by the next morning, and he was on the phone all night with these people, it was, no, this came from bats. And then those people became a part of a group that published an article in The Lancet saying, oh, yeah, this was anything other than this is nonsense. It came from bats in nature, not from a laboratory. They were covering it up. We need to see the unredacted correspondence of what they said and how they said it overnight. So here's my question again. Now I'm going to take some calls now. If people who were wrong about everything historically, they were wrong about synthetic hormone replacement therapy being safe for women, at a minimum 13% adverse effects, and those adverse effects of the 10 million women using it every day are breast cancer, ovarian cancer, colorectal cancer, dementia, heart attack, and stroke. That means you're willing to sacrifice 1.3 million women's health every year and lives to sustain a lie, but it was profitable. But not a word. The AMA has come out constantly. Oh, don't take ivermectin. And now they've just gotten a really excoriating letter from the American College of Physicians and Surgeons challenging them on this. And all these media outlets have either changed the title of their article, like Rolling Stone, or others have completely retracted it, and now they want it all to go away because they tried to make it seem like in a concerted deep state effort, oh, this is only horse medicine. You don't want to take it. You could die, and it's no value. And we presented on this program for the first time in the United States on any medium, we presented all of the peer-reviewed literature on ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, monoclonal antibodies, and everything else and showed you the hundreds and hundreds of studies in PubMed and the thousands upon thousands of scientists in the universities who did the study showing that it works. You wouldn't know any of that existed, would you? But it does. So you can either believe these dancing clowns, these polemicists, these political activists on the media pretending to be journalists, or you can look at the actual independent science. Your choice. So why would you trust people that lie constantly about important stuff, either saying global warming doesn't exist or saying, yeah, it exists, but we're not going to change any of the laws to really protect us. We'll just keep playing with the idea that all we have to do is make more solar-powered something or other. It's all a game. You trust these people? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Because they're the same institutions, the same group of scientists who have been lying about what we should do concerning COVID. Oh, and by the way, there's a guy came out, a leading guy in his field, a scientist, and I'll share that with you tomorrow. And he gave the physics on a mask. And he said, it's not about wear a mask, don't wear a mask. It's about what does the physics show? And he said that the holes in the average mask that people wear is 5,000 times larger than the virus. Now, even some of the dimwits who support, well, I won't go into what I'm about to say. These are really dim people. They're highly reactionary. They're just like, these are the people that hurl slurs and accusations, and they have no background in science. It's all politics, all the time, 24/7. Well, imagine you've got a hole in the mask. Every hole in the mask is 5,000 times larger than what the virus needs to get into your breathing space. So look at the science at some point, if you can handle it. Let's say hello to, is it Matt from New York? Mayat. Hi, Mayat.
Mayat, beloved brother, the goddess, the mother of all truth. Thank you for what you do. And I'm going to resend it, but an important email I need to your attention because it's something you requested, which also connects to my response to your question. If you look at the Goebbels-style lie of what's coming up to be the 20th anniversary, September 11th, 01, it doesn't get more lying than that and an observation that people can't observe. They can't observe there's no plane on alleged Flight 93 in Pennsylvania or at the Pentagon. And the 4 6-ton titanium engines just went up in dust. So, yes, it's absolutely related. Things are unraveling because that's where we're supposed to do as we create a new world. I look forward to your response, brother, to my email.
Thank you. And by the way, I was asked, would I be the master of ceremonies for the 9/11 panel? And I said yes, but then I'm unfortunately have to get over to do this final clinical study on aging, and so I can't attend, so I did a pre-record. You have some outstanding people going to be on that panel. So I hope people do follow that and take a look at it. Also, there's going to be a big rally, massive rally this weekend, and against the COVID restrictions. My hope is that that people will turn out and help support that effort on behalf of the unionists and the school teachers who don't want to go through the mandatory vaccines, etc. Anyhow, so I'll mention that on tomorrow's program. Thank you very much. I look forward to your email, and I will respond to you on the email. Let's say hello to, who do we have next? Jeremiah from Harlem. Jeremiah, your turn.
Hi, Gary. Pleasure to speak with you. And I want to ask my aunt who just spoke to email me, please, because we used to have lovely conversations and we lost contact. I have a very specific question for you, Gary. I listened to a very powerful recent statement by Dr. Michael Yeadon, and he was being very clear that all the talk about variants is basically a bunch of boogaloo. He said that if you were infected by the much more lethal SARS-1, for example, you would have about 80% immunity to this newer SARS, that basically your immune system would recognize SARS-2 like a cousin or a brother of the virus it had already defeated. But he was saying basically that all these variants have such a grain of sand difference between them, or just a very slight gradation. But then at the same time, they're saying that the Delta variant is bypassing the immunity offered by the various vaccines, that Pfizer in face of Delta might be down to 30% protection, all the way down from like 86% or something. So I'm wondering if you could help make some sense out of that, because I mean, if Mike Yeadon is correct and the variants are being greatly exaggerated, then is this indication, when they say the variants are undermining the vaccine, is it an indication perhaps that the vaccines just weren't as effective as they told us in the first place, and that's really what's going on?
Jeremiah, you raised three important questions. Now, I want to say goodbye to the BA audience, but we're going to continue up top of the hour. I'll address all three. First and foremost, Dr. Yeadon was a Pfizer top scientist in the vaccine department for 17 years. He's been a scientist, however, for 40 years. And he let it rip. He said, I don't care what happens to my reputation. I'm at a point in life where they're not going to destroy me, you know, but I'm going to tell the truth. And it was inspiring because he came from the belly of the beast. And now he's seeing how bad the beast is. And we have to understand there are times in life where you work for corporations and some you might get so caught up into the importance of your work and you might believe it's meaningful. And indeed, it may be. Some drugs are life-saving, that you don't pull back and see the totality of what's being done. To his claim that the variants, and there'll be dozens of variances over the years, so get ready for this to be annual. But the more people that are infected, and I actually hope that I was infected, because if I was infected, and I have, and it'll show me my titers if I was, the antibody level, that means I've got over a 600% greater immune response to the COVID. Now, his statement that it will, that all these variants are, have just subtle distinctions that make them different is true. That's also true for the flu viruses. Why do you think every year they never know which virus is going to manifest? And so they guess. They do the best guesswork, but they're always off by a substantial margin. So it is guessing. Right now, and at least for another year, we won't know how strong our natural immunity is until we have enough data of immune responding people who didn't get vaccinated but had the virus, and then we see which percentage of those people suffered adverse effects and to what degree those people were would have adverse effects without going to the hospital. But now when we have ivermectin in combination with hydroxychloroquine, in combination with monoclonal antibodies, in combination, and when you put that package together, and we have that package, in fact, it was part of the webinar that we gave people, then you should be in good shape. So on the one hand, they have known there are 15 scientific peer-reviewed papers, 15 different ones on natural immunity. I posted it on GaryNall.com. So Jeremiah, download those articles because they tell you everything about how good it is for your body to have natural immunity. Like, remember, when you have natural immunity, it means your body and all of its immune responders have enveloped the entire virus, the entire virus. That is not the case. I repeat, I state emphatically, it is not the case when you get just the spike protein. You're only getting one part of it. And therefore, you're not getting the same immune response. Now, then that goes to your last part. We were told that it was 95% effective. They lied. If you went back as we did and read, as I read on the air, the actual FDA claims on this, there were two statistics that had to be given at the same time. One was the absolute prevention, and that was never given. Never given. It was 1% effective. 1% was the absolute, and that's the number that counts. The other is purely subjective, purely guesswork. So, of course, they guessed and put it out there and had a whole propaganda campaign that everyone in the media, instead of doing their homework and looking for the absolute, and we've had multiple scientists who've gone over this, including medical biostatisticians, who said this vaccine at best was only 1%. Well, why would you give something that's only 1% effective? And it, mind you, it was never meant, never tested, and never proven to prevent you from getting COVID. And yet I watched Collins, the head of the U.S., not the USDA, but the U.S. Public Health Service. He's the top person over Anthony Fauci and everyone else. And he said, take the virus, take the vaccine, and it can prevent the virus. That is a lie. An out-and-out lie. He should lose his job immediately for misleading people. So everybody thought, let's get back to normal. We'll take the vaccine. It does not prevent the virus from getting in you, nor does it prevent you from transmitting. What it was meant to do was prevent from moderate to severe adverse reactions. It does not prevent you from going into a hospital or prevent death. Those four factors were never tested for. So now we're seeing, gee whiz, everybody over the age of 60, and they're probably hitting close to 99 to 100% vaccinated in Israel, and two vaccines, and now they have the highest rate of what are called breakthrough. Exchange the word breakthrough. That's like in the movie Apocalypse Now, where Martin Sheen went in to get Marlon Brando's character. What was his name? Colonel something. Klaus or whatever it was. Anyhow, and he didn't say, I'm going to go kill him. It says execute with extreme prejudice. I think that was the metaphor. Well, take away the word breakthrough and put reinfection. All right? Now they're told, oh, you know that green card? We're taking it away unless you get two more boosters. But have these boosters been held up to the same standards with animal tests? No. Are they absolutely identical to the vaccine that was given? No. But this is the game of the science they're playing. So right now, all those people are coming down with very severe conditions, blood clots, micro blood clotting that you can't see on a CAT scan, and it's hurting old people and killing them. In fact, in two nursing homes that had no COVID, but people had life-threatening illnesses, that's what they're there for, and they all got vaccinated, and then huge number got COVID and died. They got COVID from the vaccines, and they died from it. Gibraltar was one. Norway was a second. Spain had a third. Why were those never discussed in the mainstream media? So you see, Jeremiah, we are being played. I'm simply here to bring legitimate scientists that you've never heard on, and you hear what they're saying. I'm not saying what they're saying. The forum is allowing them a chance to say this. I'm not censoring them. Pacifica censors. I'm the program, the only program, and I'm criticized daily on Pacifica and attacked daily by people on BAI and everything else for just telling you the truth. I don't give a damn what they think. I care about the truth, and if this truth gets out and saves some lives, good. Then our mission is on point. Read the 15 articles. Go to GaryNall.com, and you'll read everything you need to know about variants, because we're going to have multiple variants. The stronger your immune system is, the better you're able to deal with those variants, as I mentioned earlier, just vitamin D. And also, if you've had the infection, and that gives you a big boost, but how much, I can't tell you because we don't have those numbers. We're seeing the people who have been infected, not vaccinated, infected, they have a very low reinfection rate, very, very low, 600% improvement over those who were vaccinated. So you could say that for the vast majority of people, and you look at how many people have been injured, over 6 million worldwide, that went not even worldwide, just four measuring groups, the European Union, that's 27 countries, the United States, and Great Britain and Scotland, but you're also dealing with over 40,000 deaths. So when 6 million people are injured, many of them with lifetime disability, and 40,000 are dead, and you're now infecting and just changing the heart, the lungs, the brain, the testes, and the ovaries in tens of millions of people, and over the next 3, 4, 5 years, we'll see the outcome of that. That is not a proper and true vaccination program. That is genetic engineering, hoping that it comes out all right. But they profit no matter what, and they never have to be can be sued, and they never have to give any of their money back. Thank you, Jeremiah. We're out of time, everyone. Stay tuned, Nutrisleet, right now.